We welcome our guest, the Timaru adventurer and educator, Sash Nukada, who's concerned that schools are cutting back on outdoor education and young people are missing opportunities to test their resilience. The 47-year-old is Sustainability and Outdoor Education Program Leader at the Ara Institute of Canterbury's Timaru Campus, Aoraki Polytech, many of you will remember it as, over many years. Last year, he won the Tall Totara Award at the New Zealand Outdoor Instructors Association Excellence Awards. The Tall Totara Award is presented to an instructor who personifies excellence in outdoor leadership and has made a significant contribution to outdoor education. With more than 30 years of adventuring under his belt, Sash Nukada firmly believes students with a love of outdoors should be encouraged to pursue their passion, and he says too few opportunities exist in the school curriculum for outdoors education, which builds not only physical stamina but mental fitness too. Sash, welcome to 9 to Noon. Great to talk to you.
Morena, Catherine. Thanks for having me.
You've had a wonderful personal experience of the outdoors. Just where have some of your adventures taken you? Quite a few peaks have been achieved.
I guess I spent most of my 20s semi-retired, retiring at the wrong end, at the other end of my life, and spent a lot of time just adventuring around New Zealand and around the Pacific Rim and various parts of the world.
I think that's the right time to do the retirement, actually, in some ways,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
That's right. So my parents are Japanese, so I don't intend to retire when I'm 65, but I've already did my retirement already in my 20s, I guess.
Yeah. And your own beginning, we're going to talk about school, and so I'm curious as to your own beginning and building your confidence and your competence in the outdoors. How did it happen for you?
So my parents weren't outdoorsy in the slightest, I guess, they immigrated from Japan when I was 5. It was just in me, and to some extent, when I was at intermediate school, there was back in the days when it was forms, there was a Form 2 tramping club, and I couldn't wait till I was Form 2 so I could join the tramping club, and tramped throughout high school, and then skied. My parents took me skiing for some reason, and when I was Form 2, and I just fell in love with skiing. And then when I went to university, I started just again fell head over heels with rock climbing, became my life for a long time. So that's how I started. And I grew up in Dunedin, plenty of outdoor adventure venues close by, Queenstown, Wanaka, within a weekend's drive. So, yeah, that's where it all kind of started.
So that's interesting that in Form 2 at your school you had a tramping club that often pops up sometimes, you know, at university, say. But
yeah.
That's, you know, opening the eyes of someone at that age to that kind of opportunity. Was that particularly impactful?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I still remember the teacher was a metalwork teacher at our primary school, Mr. Hayward, Jeff Hayward. And he obviously was a tramper himself, and so he just totally opened my eyes to what was out there. You know, we went on the Hollyford track. That was our big expedition. And, so just opened my eyes to what's in New Zealand. And we obviously have an incredible, incredible country in terms of outdoor recreational opportunities and things like that. So very fortunate. And I think, you know, I guess part of that, going talking about outdoor education, I think a lot of New Zealanders haven't really seen our backyard, our own backyard, and how fortunate we are.
Yes, it's a sport.
And maybe lockdown's a great opportunity. You know, I think a lot of Kiwis are being exposed to what we have in our own backyard and just thinking, wow, you know, people travel all around the world to come and see what we have.
For sure. But to your point, to make the most of some of these places, it's fine on the tracks, and I'm sure there'll be bookings lined up out the door, you know, for the great walks. But for some of the experiences you talk about, you do need to have had that background and to have got your basic skills level up to a point where you can truly appreciate it. I'm just thinking of the Hollyford track. At the moment, the road's closed in there, right, you know? But to enjoy or to be really seeking out some of the adventures on the scale that you have, there's no doubt there's an impact when you are exposed and you develop a love for it and get some basic skills early.
Yes, yep, for sure, Catherine. But I think, I guess over the years, having seen a lot of students come through, I'm kind of semi-convinced that, you know, the people who are into the outdoors, although kind of not, it's kind of innate almost in some people. So I guess it's about finding, try and expose a lot of Kiwis, young Kiwis, to the outdoors. And for the people that are, it really connects with them, you know, the outdoors, to really give them some pathways to make it into a career, into a passion, etc. So, yeah.
That's a good point. Those who are going to fall madly in love with it will find their way. And so I'm interested in how we approach outdoor education when we think about it in our school-age kids anyway, because, as you say, there are those who are going to latch onto it and go with it and make it a lifetime love. But what do we want for the others for whom it's less of a pull? But to your to your point, there's still so much that they can benefit from or learn from. How well are we doing on that front?
So, great question, Catherine. And I guess that's where I think outdoor education traditionally, our traditional model, has kind of not failed, but we can improve on. So, you know, the traditional paradigm of outdoor education, it's a five-day school camp. You know, you take the kids out of school, you expose them to some tramping, rock climbing, abseiling, whatever, and they, you know, and that's it, you know, and there's not many other connections made. And for kids like myself, I guess, you know, that really resonated. That was great. It's just a really good trigger that inspired them. And I know plenty of people who, say, went to, you know, Tongariro National Park, there's OPC, the Sredden and Hillary Outdoor Pursuit Centre, which is now called Hillary Outdoors. They went there as school kids, were really inspired by the 5 days and went on to make a career out of them. That's great. But as you said, for the, you know, for the other kids that didn't, that, you know, it doesn't immediately resonate with them, how can we do that better? So I think the new paradigm of outdoor education needs to head in the direction of making connections with other people in place. And I guess the reason why I really believe in outdoor education so passionately, Catherine, is I guess there's not many, given what's going on in society and in the planet right now, you know, climate change and violence everywhere and war and everything else and racial tension, I just think, you know, there's not many subjects in school that address being your best self, how to relate to other people, how to develop resilience, how to be compassionate, how to resolve conflict, how to look after the environment, you know, kaitiakitanga. There's not many subjects that develop that, and so I think, given what's going on in the world right now, outdoor education is, my book, the most important subject. It should be compulsory across the board, but so I think it's about, for the future paradigm of outdoor education, if we can, having longer courses of 2 or 3 weeks of outdoor education, which a lot of schools are going to now in various outdoor centres. So your learning's deeper, your learning's more impactful on people's lives. And it's not just about the pursuit. It's not about becoming a rock climber or a skier or whatever, but it's about making those connections with other people that aren't necessarily from the same background. It's about making connections with the land, developing a sense of place. And I think if you do that, people are more likely to look after the environment, the country, the people, community.
But it's also about what the human being needs as part of being physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually rounded. And your students are coming in, you're tutoring at ARA, right? So you're picking them up post high school. But can we talk about what could and should be happening at the school level? And I'm curious as to when you are having students coming in, clearly with a bent to start with, but are you seeing, even in the students who are coming through, and certainly are you seeing in those who aren't heading your direction, a need for the kind of resilience building, problem solving, goodness, even some of the physical skill tasks are perhaps less prevalent in our modern way of life?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I just think, I guess, you know, if you look back historically to Pierre Han, who, you know, started out with Ban in the 1940s, I think we're still seeing the same trends. You know, it's easy to look back, you know, the new generation needs to be more resilient, needs to be more fit, and et cetera. So it's always been there. But I think particularly now, you know, especially with mental health issues, I think I just really believe, and there's a lot of evidence to show, anecdotally and research-wise, that, you know, the outdoors can help mental health issues, can help, obviously, environmental issues, can help lots of things, you know. A lot of our societal and planetary-wide problems at the moment. Yes, and I think I definitely the 12 years I've been tutoring at the tertiary level, definitely, it feels like anecdotally that, you know, it's just more and more important. The more of a need of teaching students to be more resilient is definitely a big one. And having to work for things, you know. And I guess, Catherine, you know, if you look at lots of different industries, and I've seen different industries, you know, asking their employers and industry, what do you want from workers? What do you want from your workers? This isn't outdoor, this is any industry. What do you want from our workers? And it's always the same thing. It's what they want: people that are going to turn up on time, work hard, be resilient, take initiative. You know, it's all the just good human qualities. And I really believe that outdoor education is a really, really effective way to develop that. And well, I'd love to see more of it at high schools.
Well, is there a real variation or a divide, quite frankly, between schools that do provide a lot of opportunities or can provide a lot of opportunities and those who aren't or can't?
I think it comes down to the teachers, Catherine. Like, again, it just takes one, like my intermediate school teacher who started the Tramping Club, you know, it just takes one passionate teacher to drive things and go, right, we need to develop a, you know, an outdoor education program, send our students to some outdoor centre for 2 or 3 weeks with very defined learning outcomes. So it just takes, again, that's that one person can make a huge difference, that passionate teacher.
How about the numbers coming through wanting to do this as their post-school training, either for professional reasons or just to do it? How are numbers?
The numbers are reasonably steady. I haven't seen any figures, but anecdotally, I'd say that they're fairly steady. I wouldn't say they're increasing, but I think it's about getting the word and the view out there that, you know, outdoor education is more than just 5 days of, hey, let's go abseiling for 5 days, and then that's that, you know. But there's a lot more to it.
Are you seeing schools hook up with resources that can help them? Because, again, you're back to teachers who are underload. Parents often are underload, even to go and do the school camps, you know. Parents are underload with their commitments. And is there a way of having some sort of smarter affiliations that might make opportunities more available more often? Because I know this. Sometimes you'll hear about some of these clubs who are struggling for numbers as well and fearing for the future. And could we get a bit smarter about how we put the two together?
Yes, I think so. I think we need to be, Catherine. My wife is an outdoor education teacher at a secondary school, and I know how underfunded and understaffed they are, and trying to do a lot with very little. But then there's, I think there's partnerships increasing with places like Outward Bound and Hillary Outdoors, and so they're starting to diversify their product and starting to deliver outdoor education for secondary schools. Same with locally, Peel Forest Outdoor Pursuit Centre, they're doing the same, working with a lot of high schools. So I think that's potentially the way forward, one of the ways forward.
Is a struggle and a barrier with affiliations with, say, some of the tramping clubs or Federated Mountain Clubs or whatever, that these days there's inevitably a heck of a lot of bureaucratic hurdles, and they may be there for very good reasons, but if you're going to plan an event, you're really going to have to plan an event. And is that a bit off-putting, do you think, to some collaborators, potential collaborators?
Yes, I think with clubs, you know, just volunteer clubs, there's so many, there's a lot of health and safety loopholes. So, I think that's probably, I'm not too sure about how Alpine clubs and things are going. I think they're going, the Alpine club's going pretty well, but in terms of local, smaller tramping clubs offering stuff to high schools, but potential, again, future direction. But I think the other thing, problem is that a lot of the tramping clubs are obviously after school, outside school hours and weekends, whereas obviously schools are 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, so, 9 to 3. So there's a bit of a time mismatch there.
It just takes imagination, though, doesn't it? As you said, if this began to be looked at differently in the curriculum, if we began to look at it as part of addressing some of the challenges that young people are having, whether it's mental health or their self-esteem or their confidence or their resilience or their abilities to problem solve or to get away from a damn gadget, if we looked at it differently. Straight away, I can hear the time and the resources and the effort that's asking of people who are already under load. Do you have you identified whether it's physical skills or whether it again is just that problem solving, resilience, overcoming type approach that you need to really get into this stuff? Have you noticed deficits in many of the students coming through? Terrible word, but have you noticed a change in that? Or actually, again, for those who are heading your way, do they pretty much have what you always expect them to have?
No, we definitely get both ends of the spectrum. We definitely get both. We know we get some very motivated students that are, that are almost ready to hit the ground running in the industry, and then we get some other ones that definitely need to grow up, really. But that's the process we all need to go through, you know. And sometimes they grow up with us when they're studying with us over the 2 or 3 years, and then other times, obviously, people just need to kind of live life and travel and work a little bit. It's all the things like, you know, just learning that, all the things that we learn over life, that you nothing's handed to you on the plate. You need to work hard. Making connections with other people in the environment, being compassionate. That life is not all about you. All those little things, I think, they just need to learn. And
so far, so good from what I'm hearing. But as well as,
sorry, going back to the outdoor ed thing. Yeah, I just it's almost like just a societal or a ministerial level that just needs to change, that outdoor education isn't just about, in fact, it's, you know, the old paradigm was, let's go kayaking, rock climbing for 5 days and that's it. But it's actually a subject where we can teach all these good human qualities and values that are so needed in society right now, that this is one of the most effective ways we can teach this at high school and primary school. And then hopefully funding time and staffing will follow. But right now, I think a lot of it's up to just individual passionate teachers out there that are doing an amazing job.
We lost those phys ed advisors as well, didn't we? We lost those school advisors a few years back across all sorts of areas. And so is there again a bit of a gap in people who could be and should be articulating and selling just as you are right now, but is there a bit of a gap of that in the system? Or even helping people with how to set up something that might change the way they approach via the curriculum or adapt the curriculum to use phys ed this way and to use the outdoor ed this way and to make it something that they can build more successfully into meeting the curriculum?
Yeah, yes, probably, Catherine. Yeah, I'm not super familiar with the secondary school curriculum, having worked in the tertiary space. But yes, I would think there's a little bit of a gap there, eh? Again, just through my friends and my wife who are teaching at secondary school level, that definitely appears to be a lack of support in funding and resources.
Yeah. What keeps you going? You had your retirement in your 20s, so you've got to work now.
That's right.
But what keeps you going as a motivation in teaching this way? You could be doing other things, I'm sure.
I could be.
So what is it that drives the enthusiasm that we're hearing and that's been recognised with the award?
Catherine, I did 2 degrees at Otago University, bit of background here, economics degree and phys ed degree, all things. The power of passion. Like, I quickly learned that subjects that I thought were going to be interesting, but the lecturer was just sort of left 20 years ago, versus some other subjects which I thought were going to be boring, but the lecturer was so passionate, and you can't help but listen to passionate people. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible. It really hit me. And I was like, and I guess since then, I've just always lived by that motto of, if you do what you love, you never have to work another day in your life. And so I've always just tried to strive to do what I love and passionate about, and I've never felt like I've really worked. Oh, you'll never catch me saying, oh, I've got to go back to work on Monday, or, you know, I just love what I do. And I guess going back to what we've talked about, I feel a very urgent need for what I do. I know that there's lots of people tackling all the society's problems in different angles, but I guess this is my little contribution. And the aim of the day for myself is, if I can lie on my deathbed and say that I've done my absolute best to make this world a slightly better place than when I found it, I've done okay. And so that's why I feel passionate, I feel urgent, a sense of urgency about all this.
Thank you, Sash. Thank you. We're going to get you back again, okay? You've done it now.
Thank you.
We're going to get you back for some parenting segments where we might pick a specific, just a specific characteristic or specific area that you think you can help parents with using the outdoors or using this approach. Is that cool?
Yeah, no, totally. There's a lot of parallels between parenting and outdoor education, actually.
Welcome back then. Thanks, Sash Nokata, who is with the Ara Institute of Canterbury's Timaru campus and recently recognised, last year was recognised with the Tall Totara Award at the New Zealand Outdoor Instructors Association.